greatest eye in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here to take us into the intricacies of regulatory agencies in Washington, D.C., and Elon Musk. Bob, a very good evening to you. All these stories flow with one wonderful smile on my face because you've anticipated this for some time. The FAA and SpaceX, Elon Musk and the FAA. Please tell the story, Bob.
Yes, this week, the battle between the FAA and SpaceX has came to a head. You might remember last week, SpaceX was being told by the FAA that it would not get a launch license for its fifth Starship Super Heavy test flight. It blasted the FAA in a way it hadn't done before, saying that their regulatory red tape was inappropriate and inefficient and wrong. It just they were stonewalling the company for no reason, and almost as if in retaliation, this week the FAA announced it was going to fine SpaceX $633,000 for three violations of its approval license process on two different launches a year ago. Now, this is a year ago. This happened a year ago, and they did nothing until suddenly now they announced these proposed fines. Now, SpaceX can dispute these, and we'll get into that in a minute, but the fines have to do with three different violations. Utterly absurd issues because, well, I'll go into that now. So SpaceX's response, Elon Musk immediately said, we're going to sue. And then later in the week, both SpaceX and Elon Musk once again responded. Not only did Musk tweet that he was going to sue, he pointed out in a tweet that the sixth Starship Super Heavy prototypes are ready to launch. The Starship of the sixth flight has already gone through a static fire test successfully this week. And he points out that flight number five is ready to fly. Flight number six will be ready to fly before flight five even gets approved by the FAA. He was really being snarky, but pointing out the incompetence of the FAA, that they're ready to fly five, and they have six almost ready to fly, and it'll be ready to fly before they get the approvals in late November from the FAA. But then SpaceX responded even more forcefully. It sent out a public letter to the leading Republican and Democratic representatives in both the House and Senate committees that have direct authority over space activities. And in that letter, SpaceX outlined in great detail what those three issues were that caused the $633,000 fine, and pointed out how absurd and arbitrary and inappropriate the FAA's behavior was, incompetent too. In one case, for example, SpaceX said it wanted to change a new mission control center. And it submitted its request to make the switch in June. 2 months later, FAA finally approved that control center for the use in one launch, but did not expressly approve it for a second. First launch went off. SpaceX assumes rightly that it now has approvals for the second launch. Yet now the FAA is fining it for that second launch because it didn't get specific approval. This is absurd. The FAA had already approved that control center and the use thereof. In another case, the FAA claimed that the SpaceX in its countdown procedures had removed a poll of the launch mission control people during the countdown without approval. And SpaceX points out quite bluntly, they have two other polls in their countdown as procedures have always been, and there is no regulation that requires approval for the removal of this particular thing. All right, now this is the big one. This is the most egregious, the third case. It's really ridiculous. SpaceX built a new propellant factory, a fuel farm, where they would provide fuel for the rockets. And they did so because it would move it twice as far away from public accessible areas. In other words, make things much safer. The FAA approved the use of that propellant farm for a crew launch to ISS, but delayed the official approval for a different launch. SpaceX assumed that it had approval, though, so it proceeded to do the second launch. I should point out, when the FAA approved it on that first launch, it clearly stated that the new facility proposed no safety hazards. So SpaceX had every reason to think it could go with the second launch. They had an FAA official in the mission control observing who made no objections and said, go ahead, proceed with the countdown. This is when things got stupid. During the countdown, the FAA suddenly delivered a letter to SpaceX denying it permission to launch because it was using that propellant factory that the FAA had approved. The mission control called the FAA. An official picked up the phone, and they told him, you know, it's really unsafe for the FAA to be sending these type of letters during operations on the fly with a propellant factory and fuel being loaded on a rocket. The official agreed on the phone and, quote from SpaceX, did not direct SpaceX to stand down or pull its license. So the launch proceeded safely. And now the FAA wants to fine a year later SpaceX for this situation. Now, I expect the FAA to try to defend these situations, but I don't see what they have any grounds. I think if SpaceX sues, they're going to win all hands down. How this affects future launches of Super Heavy Starship, we don't know. You know, SpaceX has tried to always treat the FAA gently in its battles over red tape because you don't want to antagonize the people that have to prove your launches. But I think SpaceX just finally had enough, and they decided that the FAA people have to be slapped around a bit. I will say that there is definitely politics involved here. The Democratic Party, which controls the White House, sees Musk as a political enemy, and they have clearly demonstrated in the past 3 years their eager willingness to censor, to blacklist, to arrest, and even prosecute such opponents just because they're political opponents. And Musk is now a political opponent, so it seems to me that there's lawfare going on here to try to get rid of him without question.
FCC is also interested in SpaceX. How so, Bob?
Yeah, this is an example of that arbitrary lawfare. One of the FCC commissioners blasted the chairman of the FCC this week for her partisan hostility and the FCC's partisan hostility to SpaceX. A year ago, the FCC canceled a almost billion-dollar grant to Starlink because it claimed that that SpaceX was unable, and this grant was to provide internet service to rural communities. And the FCC had awarded SpaceX Starlink that award because it was clearly doing that job very successfully. But a year ago, for inexplicable reasons, the FCC canceled the grant and stated that the company had failed to demonstrate that it could deliver the promised service, which is patently absurd and false. But that's what they did.
Wait a minute. That's what I've got. How did they not deliver the service?
That's the point. It's a complete lie. That's what the FCC said. We reported this at the time. They canceled this billion-dollar grant, stating that Starlink isn't providing the service when, in fact, it's the only one who is doing so right now. So they canceled. That's the fact. What has happened now is that the head of the FCC, Jessica Rosenworcel, this week accused SpaceX of being a monopoly because of its success in launching Starlink satellites. And Brendan Carr, the other commissioner, blasted her. On one hand, they can't deliver the service, and on the other, they're a monopoly for delivering the service. You can't have it both ways, and it just demonstrates there's partisan politics going on at the FCC. They're out to get SpaceX no matter what it does.
So the FCC is unaware that I'm talking to you on Starlink. They don't know about this.
I think that they don't care. It's a partisan attack on a political enemy of the Democratic Party. And I will point out that the chairman of the FCC and the majority on the FCC are Democrats right now. Yeah. And they are using that for political reasons.
Axiom is in trouble. Why?
Well, this was a report in Forbes that I thought was really significant. It detailed in great length what appear to be problems at the company Axiom. Axiom is a startup spaceship company, space station company. They're building a space station. They want to attach to ISS initially and then fly independently. They've done tourist flights to ISS using Dragon capsules and rockets. It appears that they have financial problems and management problems. They've had to lay off people and they've had trouble meeting their payroll. And in fact, they've been losing money on those tourist flights. Partly because they have to pay for everything. They don't have their own rocket or spaceship. And partly because NASA has imposed a lot of requirements and extra costs on them that they can't handle and did not expect. And so I don't know if they're going to survive, but this article does raise significant issues that those who follow this subject should be aware of.
And consolidation can look like this. they could.
Yeah, right now there are three space station consortiums building space stations with NASA funds. Axiom is one. Voyager Space Star Lab is another. And then Blue Origin's led Orbital Reef is a third. Axiom right now looked like it was matching up with Voyager Space, with Orbital Reef well behind. But we'll have to see how this plays out. There's a fourth station being built, completely independent of the government, with no government funds. That's Bass Haven 1. That's going to launch first. It's going to do the first manned 30-day mission first. It's probably going to be the most successful of all of them because no government money. They can move fast and they can do it cheap.
And a detail about Axiom that puts me off. Founded in 2016, it promised investors the first station module would be aloft in 2020. I don't like.
Yeah, that's one of the points. Yeah, that's one of the points Forbes points out, that they're way behind schedule. And the reason they're behind schedule might be because they haven't had the capital to pay the company that's building the module, so they've had to slow down work.
It's the Virgin Galactic's curse, Bob. Do not promise a date. Do not do it. It's rocket science.
Well, the old line from Scotty in Star Trek, which is under-promise and overproduce. In this case, they are over-promising and underproducing. That's the exact opposite of what you should do.
The Indian government. Bob, is it still okay? Is this still your favorite big space outfit?
I don't have a favorite. You keep saying that, John. They're not my favorite big space operation, but they've done some things that are good and some things that are not so good. What has happened with the Indian government, the Modi government now has approved a major series of space projects over the next decade, and they are aiming at capitalism in space to try to get private enterprise to do this for them under the management supervision of their space agency. And so this new approved plans includes a sample return mission to the moon. It includes the funding for the first module of their proposed space station with a 28 launch and the completion of the station by 35. It includes a detailed program of manned and unmanned missions to that module and that space station using a Gaganyaan capsule, which is going to be hopefully doing its first manned launch within a year. It includes a Venus orbiter targeting a 28 launch, and it also includes building a new, bigger rocket. What this program does is it basically lays out financing for India to energize its private space industry, basically following in the footsteps of NASA and capitalism in space, John. That's what I'm hoping, at least.
What is Eutelsat?
Eutelsat is a very old, big satellite communications company. It's been around since the 60s. It's French-based. It has to get its satellites into orbit. It has contracts with both Ariane 6, the Ariane Group's Ariane 6 rocket, and Relativity's Terran R rocket. Terran R hasn't been launched yet. And so they looked at the situation with the Ariane 6 being delayed and having a lot of contracts already and maybe can't meet the demand. And they looked at Terran R as not being launched yet. And they decided to need to sign another launch company to give them some flexibility and redundancy and maybe more likely be able to launch. And so they've now signed a multi-launch contract with the Japanese rocket company Mitsubishi, which builds the H-3 rocket for Japan. Now, what's interesting about this is it's good for Japan, and the Mitsubishi is now making money, and it's very clear now Japan is following capitalism in space because this deal was not made with the space agency, JAXA. It was made directly with Mitsubishi, which makes the rocket. That's a good sign. But what's interesting about the deal is that they did not sign up SpaceX. They didn't go to SpaceX. And there's probably two reasons for that. One, they want to diversify. If they go to SpaceX, they're not helping other rocket companies to come along. And for satellite companies, the best thing that happens is to have as many rocket companies profitable as possible. But the second reason probably is because there is a dislike of SpaceX and Elon Musk emotionally. It's kind of childish, but this does exist in a lot of places, and that includes Europe. And I think that's part of the reason as well, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.